If you believe assault is an act, not an adjective, your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Yeah. Good morning, everyone. Man, that just gets you up and punches you right straight in the face, doesn't it? Man, I love that. Whether you like it or not, that rocks. Okay, here we go. Thank you very much, RJ Hinder and crew. Another fine addition. Thank you very much for sending your audience this way. I welcome everybody, good folks listening to RJ Hinder, and incorporated you in with the 2A Radio family. I'm feeling good. So, a little bit of housekeeping, guys. First of all, right here at RBN, Republic Broadcasting, we're always trying to spread the word and get the truth and the information out there to the masses. Well, we could always use a little bit of help from friends. So, for $8, $8, that's it, and it's flat fee, $8, you can get 100 generic RBN cards. I say generic because they don't have anybody's name and title on them that you can hand out. And these are good looking cards. These are not just some sort of cheap thing that came off a laser printer or bubble jet. These are very nice printed cards. Now, I come from a printing background. I was raised in a print shop. I know what good work is and I know what garbage shortcuts are. This is good looking stuff. For $8, you can get 100 of these cards to hand out. You can also, it also comes with a bumper sticker, that's included, as well as a free copy of Aaron Russo's America, From Freedom to Fascism. If you have not seen this particular video, it's a movie, it's a documentary that Aaron Russo did. It was his last project before he died of cancer. And RBN's own Dave Champion happened to be one of Aaron's consultants on this movie, because he goes into a lot of things dealing with taxes as well. It's a very, very encompassing movie. I saw this thing a couple years ago. It is great. And again, Dave Champion, he has his show here on RBN Monday through Friday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon Central Time. He has the hour just before John Stadtmiller comes on. So he had involvement in Freedom to Fascism. And with that being said, $8 is going to get you the 100 business cards, the bumper stickers, and Aaron Russo's Freedom to Fascism. And you can get that one of two ways. You can either send the $8 in to 2251 Double Creek Boulevard. That's two different words. Double, then Creek, I guess three different words, then Boulevard, Suite 302. Okay? That's in Round Rock, two different words, Texas, TX, 78664. Or you can call up. You can call 800-724-2719, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time. 800-724-2719, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time. And you can get all of this, the 100 cards, as well as the bumper sticker, as well as Aaron Russo's copy, From Freedom to Fascism, for $8. So take care of that. Got plenty of news, information, commentary, all that great stuff coming up in the rest of the show. So stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is live. 1-800-313-9443.
All right, folks, welcome back. I'm going to talk a little bit about kind of a pet project that a buddy of mine and I are doing. Justin Campbell, Handgun Combat Master, he did an interview here after he passed the Handgun Combat Master's skills test and became Handgun Combat Master number 43 under Chuck Taylor. That was back in April or May. I know he passed in April. I think we did the interview in April. Anyhow, I have a Remington 700 in 22-250. That's a chambering I have this gun in. It happens to be the Remington E-Tronics rifle. Some of you may be familiar with that. If you're not, the E-Tronics rifle was made early in this last decade. It's kind of funny, 2000 and forward is last decade. In the last decade, for about 3 or 4 years, they made a gun called an E-Tronics, E-T-R-O-N-X. And the E-Tronics rifle, the unique feature of it was when you press the trigger, it doesn't go through a mechanical stage of firing. It goes through an electronic stage of firing. It has an electronic primer, which, by the way, is not cheap. Just so you understand, if you buy 1,000 primers, you might spend, I don't know, between $30 and $40 for 1,000 primers. For this gun, the current rate for 1,000 primers is $180. I remember buying 1,000 fully loaded 308 rounds for $99, almost half the price of nothing more than primers. Now, anyhow, so the primers are priced. You pretty much have to hand load this because they only make one round that you can buy, and that one round, it's about $35 for 20 rounds, so it's expensive. You can certainly hand load these things way less expensive than that. I have enough stuff to, well, I bought 1,000 primers. I have more than 1,000 bullets, more than 1,000 casings, certainly enough powder, but I have enough to hand load 1,000 rounds, and I've probably done 400 rounds at this point. Anyhow, what happens when you press the trigger of the E-Tronics rifle? It goes back to a point where the only mechanical effect happens, where it actually will then engage into some sort of electronic sensor that goes back into the buttstock where there is a, it's a circuit board is what it is. It's a circuit board that's in the stock, powered by a 9-volt battery that goes into the buttstock. You pull off the pad, you put a 9-volt battery in there. Of course, being as how this is a varmint gun, I use the Energizer 9-volt battery exclusively because I want to shoot that damn bunny. Then, what it does, it takes those 9 volts, increases them through some sort of flux capacitor, like on the Time Machine on Back to the Future, and it volts it up to like 150 volts. And then that signal goes through the head of the bolt, where the firing pin normally would be found, and zaps the electronic primer, firing the round. All of this happens with incredibly low and incredibly fast what's called lock time. Lock time is nearly non-existent. Lock time is the time between when the trigger actually breaks and when a cartridge is actually fired. Now, usually, you have no idea what lock time is because it is so fast, it's really not that perceptible to the human. However, once you fire an E-Tronics rifle, you really realize that there is, in fact, lock time. Because the lock time on the E-Tronics rifle is 27 millionths of a second. Okay, if you could break a second down into 1 million parts, it only takes 27 of those parts from the time the trigger's pressed until the primer's being ignited. So fast, in fact, that if my 22-250 E-Tronics was fired next to a similar rifle, same, it would be the same rifle, only standard firing system in it, same mechanical, you know, a mechanical firing system, the bullet from my gun would be, let's see, what did they say in the thing? Something like 300 yards downrange before the next one left the muzzle. It's ridiculous. Maybe not 300 yards. Maybe 130 yards. I forget what it is. It's a pretty fast difference. And when you press the trigger and you realize instantly there is a bang, you then realize with a standard rifle, wow, you really have been experiencing a bit of a delay. Anyhow, so I've loaded some rounds for that, and all of the rounds I've loaded so far, are the 55 grain ballistic silver tip made by Combined Technologies. Combined Technologies is a co-op between Nosler Bullets and Winchester. And these Combined Technology bullets, they have actually a black Teflon coating, and then they have a little bit of a silver tip. If you go on to some place like, say you go to MidwayUSA.com and you go through the reloading stuff, you look at all of the Combined Technology bullets, all the different weights, all the different calibers, you can read the reviews that people have. These Combined Technology bullets are supremely accurate and supremely deadly. Now, I loaded them to try to see what type of groups I could get out of the thing. And if I actually thread my suppressor onto that gun, which even shrinks up groups, and I haven't completed my, I haven't completed the load yet. I haven't really got it so refined that it's exactly the load that I want to have. I'm still working on it a bit. But I loaded up a good 300 or 400 rounds for class where I fired at least, I guess I loaded about 200 rounds, in fact, and I probably fired at least 150 of those. So I need to do a little bit more load development. But with the Canon, I can actually hold, I think it's 3/8 inch with the Canon, and just slightly over a half inch with the can off. And I know this is a one-hole shooting gun. I know I can do it. I know the bullets can do it once I get the load down. Anyhow, that's the gun. I got it so I could go out varmint hunting. You know, prairie dogs on up to coyotes. Now, if you load the right round, you could actually take white-tailed deer and antelope with this gun and that round. However, it's a big 24-inch barrel, 26-inch barrel. You know, heavy, fluted, bull barrel. It's just, it's not something you really want to hump around a lot. It's a big, heavy gun. It's more like set up and start sniping these little critters. That's the whole reason I got the gun. Well, went out with Justin. He ended up picking up a 223 WSSM, which is a 223 Winchester Super Short Magnum. Now, the 223 WSSM is the fastest traveling 22 caliber gun that you can get from the factory. You can actually get a 40 grain round to go about 4,500 feet per second. It's faster than the 220 Swift, which held the crown of fastest round that you can get from a factory chambered rifle. Now, one of the things that Justin and I are looking to do is go out and kill some of these little critters out in the prairie. So I ordered some, I have some 40 grain rounds. I also ordered some 36 grain rounds, even some very, very light 30 grain rounds. So the Barnes, what are they called? The varmint grenade, which if you look at the video of these, you can go on YouTube and search varmint grenade or exploding varmints, things like that. You can see some really cool footage. And, these things literally, it's like somebody stuck a stick of dynamite in their kazoo and lit it. That's really the way that these little prairie dogs look when it's done. I don't know how many of you are out there that do any sort of hunting or predator control by shooting these little varmints, but I got to tell you, it's, pardon the pun, a blast. So, anyhow, the reason I bring this whole thing up is Barnes is a great company. They're out of Utah. It's a good quality company. It's a family-owned company, and Barnes is close to Carnes, one letter off the beginning. They throw an E to just before the S, which I don't. Anyhow, it's close enough. They also are very big into what's referred to as kind of green technology. They have a lot of lead-free bullets. These varmint grenades are lead-free. They have no lead in them. They're not full copper. They have something else in them. But the thing is I don't buy these huge, massive reloading manuals. I buy these manuals by a different company, I forget offhand, that are by caliber. And what they do is they take all the major reloading manuals, all the different bullet makers and all the different powder manufacturers, and they combine it into one small booklet. So I got a booklet rather than a whole bunch of books, and that booklet is for the round I want to load. I think that is incredibly efficient because I don't load for a tremendous number of calibers. I only load for a few. So I buy the booklet, which is like $11, instead of all these huge reloading manuals, which are like $50. Then as new bullets and powder come out, just about every bullet and powder manufacturer has a website with load data on there, so you can go on there and look. As it turns out, I go to Barnes because in my manual, they didn't have the 30-grain or the 36-grain varmint grenades listed. and my 22-250 manual. So I go online, and Barnes has the 36-grain varmint grenade listed. As a matter of fact, they have it listed twice with a couple different powders. What they don't have is they don't have the 30-grain varmint grenade on there. So I'm going to swing by there sometime this week when I'm at the SHOT Show, and I'm going to see if they happen to have low data on that 30-grain. Because as long as that bullet doesn't disintegrate being pushed too fast, if it will stay together, if the 30-grain will stick together, all calculations show that we could push that round through Justin's rifle at close to 5,000 feet per second. We might load a couple of them just to see, but that causes a tremendous amount of throat erosion in your chamber wear. But four or five rounds going down range, chronographed at close to 5,000 feet per second, provided the bullet doesn't actually come apart, would be cool. I mean, we could be literally kind of setting the pace, setting a new record on, smaller, custom-loaded varmint grenade sort of blow up the little prairie dog sort of rounds. It would just kind of be neat to be able to load what at that time is the fastest round there's been. Anyhow, folks, stay tuned. There's plenty more to come. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio. I've been roaming around, always looking down at all I see.
You can have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us right now. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
So when it comes to doing a little bit of predator control and varmint hunting, probably the most popular calibers out there are 22 calibers, and they're fast rounds. They're things that'll go 3,000 feet per second or beyond. I know that if I take some of these lighter rounds, and this will give you a little bit of a difference with the rounds, I could probably get the 30 and 36 grain varmint grenade through my 22-250 to fire around 4,200 feet per second. Now, Justin's, I guess a 220 Swift above that could probably get somewhere around 44 to 4,500 feet per second. Justin's 223 Wissom WSSM would probably get more like 47 or 4,800 feet per second. So the question is, why fire around so fast? And I'll tell you why. There isn't a whole bunch of joy in shooting a prairie dog or a rabbit or something like that, where you're set up in your own little hide, basically sniping these little creatures that are tearing up the countryside. There's no joy in shooting them. And then once you get done with the recoil, you settle back down and you see the aftermath. The real sickening fun is watching these little bad boys explode. And if your bullet isn't going fast enough, the recoil is going to push your scope off of target before the bullet gets there or before the bullet actually does its damage. So if you've got a really fast, because recoil is going to come to you at pretty much the same speed. It really doesn't matter how fast the bullet's going or how slow it's going. If you're firing a 444 Marlin that's not going that fast, maybe 1,700 feet per second, the recoil is going to push you back at the same rate as, say, a 22 Cheetah going at 4,500 feet per second. It's still going to push at the same rate. The thing is the bullet's going so much faster when doing these little prairie dogs and other vermin out in the prairies, out in the field, you'll actually get to see the effect before the recoil sends your scope off target. That's why you want to have a faster bullet. So, that's if you want to have the pleasure of watching. Because your buddies with the binoculars or the video camera, if you take it out, they're going to be able to see it. If they have the video camera, be able to document it. The thing is, you're the one pressing the trigger. Why not enjoy? So, we're actually going to do a little warm-up. There's plenty of coyotes and rabbits out here where we live. There's really nothing in the way of prairie dogs. We have to travel a ways. Being in southern Nevada around the Las Vegas area, there's really no prairies or prairie dogs The closest I know of, there's some in, southern Utah, which is about a good 3 or 4 hour drive to where they are from where I am. I understand there's some outside of Flagstaff, Arizona. We're trying to find something within a 4 to 6 hour drive of the Las Vegas area where we can go prairie dogging. And if anybody happens to know of a place like that, I would love to know. Please shoot me an email, bill@2aradio.com. Anyhow, that's why 22 caliber is all you need. You don't need a big gun, certainly for a small animal. And the faster the round goes, the more likely you are to see it go in the scope. That's really the reason for some of these really fast 22 caliber rounds. Also, you get the distance out of the deal. I mean, you can shoot a 40 grain round out of a 22 long rifle, and it's not going to go nearly as far, nearly as fast, or do nearly the stuff as a jacketed 22 caliber round out of one of these really big, bad, more powerful 22 caliber guns, like the 22-250, 223 WSSM, if you have a custom-loaded 22 Cheetah, that's actually a really bitchin' round. That's essentially a 308 case necked down to 22 caliber, and they have two different versions, one with a sharper angle on the neck and one with a more shallow angle on the neck. Certainly a 220 Swift. Very, very fast 22 caliber rounds. Excellent for getting prairie dogs and coyotes and anything else out there that's a menace. Justin and I are actually going to do a little warm-up with some coyotes around here, probably some rabbits as well. I actually just got an order that I got from Midway USA that had a predator call of sorts, a decoy, I guess it is. And this cool little decoy you can plug something like an MP3 player into. It's got a speaker in it, and then program whatever sorts of sounds you want. Well, I went online and was able to download some sounds of rabbits in distress, several different ones, fawn in distress, coyote pups, things like that. And then I ended up using my editing software that I make my bumpers and other things with, and made each one of these 90 minutes long with pauses between the different cries so that we could set up, plug that thing in, and be able to call coyotes. And by the time that particular sound file was done, we would have exhausted any coyotes that were going to be coming, by far. Anyhow, if you haven't gone out in the field and done this sort of thing, it is fun. It is good hunting training for if you're going out and doing any larger game. It's a good warm-up, and it's certainly a good time to be had for all. So, enough about that. When we come back from this break, we're going to talk about police abuse and how they turned it around on a private citizen to effect an arrest. The exact type of police abuse that I scream about here on the radio. So we've got a new one of these actually emailed to me from a listener. So you'll enjoy this. Stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
By dictators since 1917. The 2A radio show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
One of the things that ticks me off is when I see people parked in a fire lane in front of a large store, be it a grocery store, a Walmart, a Target, some other department store. It ticks me off when someone parks in the fire lane, even if they're parked and sitting there. They're not a fire truck. Get the hell out of the fire lane. Now, oftentimes, especially in big cities, the guys that work out of a firehouse go out, and they'll go out and they'll run official errands. in the fire truck, close to the fire station. They'll go to the grocery store, and they'll buy a bunch of food because they're there for 24-hour shifts. They might go to an office supply store if they need some office supplies. They'll have their truck. And they'll park the truck in front of these businesses in the fire lane, even though there's no fire going on. I'm okay with that, because if it's part of the deal that they don't have somebody that goes out and gets all this garbage that they need for them, well, then they need to go out and get it. They go out and they get it at a place that's near the firehouse, so they're not too far away from their area of responsibility. And the driver stays in the truck, and the other guys, you know, a certain amount of guys are going. Everybody has their list, their area, they understand where they're going. They're in, they're out very quickly, and they pay for it with a department credit card, however they pay for it. I don't know, PO, who knows. And then they get back in the truck, and they go back to the firehouse. But the whole time, the truck is parked out front. The driver's in the truck, generally, and that's in case if they get a call, they can drop the stuff on the floor, the guys can jump in the truck and go. They have all their gear and everything with them, in case they get a call while they're out. I'm okay with that. What I don't like is when people sit there waiting on someone else. I also don't like it when cops park there. It doesn't say emergency lane. It says fire lane. Now, maybe it should say emergency lane, because if somebody inside suffers from a heart attack or a seizure or something, the ambulance is going to park there. I'm okay with that, too. But if it says fire lane, in every state in the union, you will find a law against parking in a fire lane unless you are an approved emergency vehicle. In almost every state, that is a vehicle from the fire department, not the police department. So here's a story that was emailed to me from a listener. And it says, a Chattanooga man says state troopers storm his home, drag him down after he makes a parking comment. Now, this is written by a lady named Andrea Rich, who is the editor of this particular paper. When a Chattanooga man left the grocery store Sunday afternoon, he thought it was nervy that someone parked a pickup truck in the fire lane beside the entrance, so he asked the driver what gave him the privilege. The driver was an off-duty state police trooper, and by the end of the night, the man with the questions was in jail with facial injuries and charges pending against him. Ron Doyle acknowledges that he speaks his mind, and wasn't too shy about asking the driver of the pickup parked in the fire lane, no parking area, in front of the Norland Avenue Giant on Sunday afternoon, this is a week ago Sunday, why he was there. Which is great. That's exactly the type of move I would have. Doyle said he went to the store after watching one of the NFL playoff games, and he walked to get there. He was there earlier in the day, and his car wouldn't start for the trip home, so Doyle walked home, and then walked back later after the game to get some things from the Staples and the Giant, and then also to restart his car and bring it home. The man in the pickup truck flashed a badge from his wallet, saying that badge entitled him to park there. Doyle replied that the man was special, since he was not in a patrol car or in uniform, and had a child with him. Doyle said he walked away, and the off-duty officer, Trooper Craig Finkel, called him back. Doyle said he walked part of the way back to Finkel and heard the off-duty officer ask on his cell phone for units that can roll now. Doyle went to his car, it started, and he went home. Finkel followed, he said, but when Doyle turned into the alley by Norland Pub that gives him access to his driveway, Finkel continued along Norland Avenue. At home, where he lives with his two bulldogs, Doyle said he put away his groceries, let his dogs out of the kitchen area, and had a martini he'd prepared earlier and left on the counter. He said he'd had the same kind of drink earlier in the day. When Doyle saw three state police cars pull up behind his duplex, he gathered up his dogs and got them upstairs so he could confine them to a front bedroom. When the troopers began knocking on the window of his newly installed back door, the female dog gave Doyle a bit of a hard time about moving away from the knocking instead of moving toward it, but when he commanded her and the male to go up to the bedroom, they went. As Doyle came downstairs, he called 911 and asked for borough police assistance. Quote, I told them I needed borough cops at my place, that state police were yelling that I was under arrest, and I didn't even do anything, Doyle told the Public Opinion, the newspaper. By the time Doyle got back to his kitchen door, he said the officers were pounding on the door and yelling at him that he was under arrest for disorderly conduct. He says, now, look, before I get to what he says, I have to let you know that there are what are called exigent circumstances that police can enter into a home or building without a search warrant or arrest warrant. Exigent circumstances. Violation of a misdemeanor is not an exigent circumstance. It has to really be due to loss of life. Someone could lose their life, you know, some sort of medical emergency sort of thing. When it comes to criminal behavior, possibly that it would be dispensing of vital information in a, like a class A felony sort of thing. There's just several things that, there's only a few things where exigent circumstances come in. Other than that, you're done. And state troopers are almost universally referred to as misdemeanor cops in a felony world. Meaning all they deal with, for the most part, are misdemeanors. Traffic citations, citations for accidents, you know, things like that. They usually don't get into much felony work when you're a state trooper or a highway cop. You just don't. So even the biggest misdemeanor all of a sudden becomes their big glory days. Basically, they're turbocharged parking maids in most areas in most states. Not all over. There are some state cops that actually have to work, but most of them are just turbocharged meter maids, and they're a total pain in the ass, and they provide absolutely nothing to society, and they don't do anything other than revenue generation. So it's a sorry-ass job. It's one of the lowest, it's probably the lowest rung of law enforcement there is. To actually be law enforcement, it's just, it's slightly above security. It's slightly above mall cop in most areas. Obviously, these guys in this story is what we're talking about with that. Doyle says, I kept the phone open with the 911 operator on the line and told these guys that I was going to open the door. So please don't break the glass on my new door. As Doyle began turning the lock on the door to open it, in the affidavit of probable cause filed in the case, the officer said Doyle had an aggressive stance when he opened the door, which swings into the kitchen. How can you have an aggressive stance when opening a door inwards towards you? Yet more lies and bullcrap from these cops. Doyle said one of the troopers kicked it in, denting the new metal door, and the two troopers dragged him to the ground. With his face bounced off the floor, the nose piece on his eyeglasses cut across the bridge of his nose, and he also suffered an open abrasion above his forehead. When Doyle was taken outside and spread over the hood of a patrol car and handcuffed, the retired Marine, who'd worked as a civilian policeman on military bases after service, said he told state police troopers he wanted an attorney. He also asked them if anyone could get his dogs out of the front bedroom so they'd have access to the water while he was gone. Doyle said he was taken to Chattersburg Hospital for a blood alcohol test and then booked into Franklin County Jail on two charges of driving under the influence and one charge of disorderly conduct. He was released on his own recognizance Monday after a teleconference with a judge. The charging officers never saw Doyle drive, he said, and when he drank after he got home, he didn't drive to Giant that afternoon, he walked. The charging officer also did not witness his discussion with Finkel, who called for troopers to roll out on Doyle after his question about parking in a fire lane, he says. According to the officers who filed the charges, the trooper Graves and, let's see, Remington, Finkel told, I'm sorry, Trooper Graves and Remington, Finkel told them that Doyle yelled obscenities across the lot of Giant at Finkel and was publicly drunk. The affidavit of probable cause also states that Doyle yelled obscenities at the officers who came to his house. Joel said most of his conversation should be on the 911 recording because he left the line open when the troopers were there and Doyle wanted Burrow assistance. Public opinion filed a Freedom of Information request on Tuesday for that tape and was notified on Wednesday by the county clerk, Gene Burns, who is the county's appointed open records officer, that the public interest in disclosure does not outweigh the interest in non-disclosure. Can you believe that? The public interest in disclosure does not outweigh the interest in non-disclosure. So, public opinion filed an appeal with the Pennsylvania Open Records Office that same day its request was denied. Doyle has been active with the local Marine Corps League and was the commander when he instituted the National Toys for Tots program on the local level, which that branch of the league had not been doing at the time. He moved here to work with Letterkenny and was retired from there, which is a business. In the late 1990s, Doyle and a woman he was living with separated and she blah, da, 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 da. None of this, the rest of this really matters. Let's see. Doyle's preliminary hearing is set for Tuesday, which I believe is today, before Magistrate District Judge Gary L. Carter. Doyle is represented by Hagerstown, Maryland Area Attorney James Reid. Okay, so I'm going to do my best to try to find out what the latest update of this is. What we have is an off-duty cop, in this case a state trooper, who believes he has some form of entitlement when he's not on duty to do as he chooses. Now, it's my opinion that Ron Doyle should arrest this officer, Finkel. What a great name, by the way. Finkel, right? Well, Doyle should arrest Finkel for having been parked in a fire lane. That's what should happen. If I can find any way in the world to track down Ron Doyle of, let's see, Chambersburg. That's right, Chambersburg. And I can imagine that's Chambersburg, Maryland. If anybody happens to be around there and happen to know a Ron Doyle of Chambersburg, Maryland, please send me information, billet2aradio.com. I would love to have this guy on to interview, as well as suggest to him he do a citizen's arrest on the scuzzball that was parked in the fire lane. Easy enough to do. By the way, I have to give you guys some information. If the cops are at your door, pounding on the door, demanding that you let them in, don't open the door. Don't let them in. Just don't do it. Because if they decide, you know what, screw it, we're going to bust in the door and go in on our own, that is called fruits of the poisonous tree. They have just violated the provisions for entering into a home. Now, they might come up with some garbage. Oh, we heard screams. Screams isn't enough. Screams could be some intimate affair. And that doesn't mean that you can bust in the house and go after somebody. Especially if they, oh, we heard screams, go in there and there was nothing to any screams, then they still are not allowed to do anything. If you open the door, they're not allowed in unless you invite them in. However, here's another thing. If you open the door and a cop can reach in and grab you and yank you outside, that is legal. The cops can do that. Supreme Court affirmed it. So if you do decide to speak with them through the door, or if you're going to open the door, open it. As you open it, say you're not allowed in and stand way back where they can't grab you. My suggestion is don't even bother with any of that. Don't open the door. Ron Doyle should have never opened the door. If he's worried about the police pounding on it and causing damage to his new back door, well, then grab a video camera. Or if you happen to have video on your cell phone, grab your cell phone and run the camera and film them pounding on this door. Then you sue them. File a complaint and you sue them. Now, this cop lied on an affidavit, as it would appear, to get the other cops to go in there and do his dirty work because he was off duty, is yet just another bit of entitlement, abuse, and cover-up. The three big problems in law enforcement: entitlement, abuse, and cover-up. Now, you know, I've been doing my best to perform a citizen's arrest on a cop for something that I saw go down on December 9th. Today is January 19th. It still hasn't happened. I'm being stonewalled by Las Vegas Metro Internal Affairs. You've also heard me say for many, many months, ever since I've been on the air, that there is a real problem with the police investigating themselves because they have their own interest in mind. Certainly, a civilian trying to perform a citizen's arrest on a police officer from Las Vegas Metro from something they did while on duty is not something that the police department wants to have happen. So they're stonewalling me and quite honestly lying to me. Now, every time I talk about this on the air, I end up getting a call from Internal Affairs. It just works out that way. Last Friday was the last time I talked about this on the air, and I got a phone call. I got a voicemail as I was just still polishing up the show. So when we return from this break, I'm going to share with you the information left on that voicemail and my response. So stay tuned. I'll be right back.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Back off, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong if this is not where you belong.
Okay, so last Friday I was talking about these jackasses at Las Vegas Metro in the Internal Affairs Department. I was originally dealing with a Detective Cook, who then I ended up dealing with a Sergeant Lush. Now, the reason the detective was out of it was because the sergeant was going to look at this, and probably from the director of the lieutenant, the direction under the direction of the lieutenant, look, there's no way we're going to allow a citizen to do a citizen's arrest on an on-duty Metro officer. So we're not going to allow this. So here's the story. And they concocted the story. There's really no other reason for this. And they said, look, the officer that car was assigned to, we don't have him signed in. He didn't work that day. So we don't know who was driving that car. So we don't know what to do. So I told him what to do. I told him how to find out who it was. I told him two different ways to find out who was driving that vehicle. One was to check the logout sheet. Oh, well, no, we don't see that it was logged out. The other one's to check dispatch, because when you take a vehicle, you log on to the computer. That's how you communicate, understand what's going on. And that computer was logged on sometime during that day. And they know who was logged on to it, because you put in a username to log on there, like your own little password. It's assigned to you. You're the only one with it. You put in your personnel number, and you put in your username or password, and you're logged onto that computer, which is part of that car. So unless computers were swapped out of that car, and even then they'd have a record of that, they know who was driving the car. They know who was driving the car. They just won't tell me. So what they're doing is they're obstructing justice. They're obstructing an investigation. And if things don't go my way, I will find a way to try and arrest not only the officer that was driving like a jackass on December 9th, but Sergeant Lush for impeding this investigation and lying in an investigation. Because as a cop, now he's lying to me, and I'm the one trying to get the investigation done. So, I have no problem arresting everybody I have to on that department to get this done. I really don't. I have no problem at all. So, I got a call on Friday, and this Sergeant Lush, personnel number 5550. Mine was 4901, so this guy came on a few years after I left. So this guy, he tells me that, I called, I left a message for you, I didn't hear back, so I'm going to go ahead and close this investigation, this complaint. If there's anything else you need, go ahead and call me. So I called him within about 45 minutes, never got an answer back. Now, the guy works Tuesday through Friday, so hopefully I'll get a call today. However, I'm going to be pretty busy today. But let him know how sorely disappointed I am that a professional supervising investigator can't go and find out who was driving a car. Who was driving a car? They don't have the ability to find out who was driving a car. And how sad that is. And that I'm going to need to talk to the lieutenant. Because that's the way I roll. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you. In Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Thank you for tuning in with me. Stay tuned for the Lenman News Hour coming up next, followed by the Ernest Hancock Show.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.